And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 21st in the year of our Lord, or the year of the Common Era, 2021. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. Listen in today to hear our starry-eyed reflection on the inauguration of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Oh, I'm doing quite well today. This has been an exciting day, don't you think?
It has, absolutely. I sort of almost lost my own thread there, thinking about what a wonderful day, what a new world is before us, eh? Yes. So Mariah, yesterday was the inauguration of Joseph Robinette Biden to be president of the United States. He is now officially president of the United States. All of the terrible memories of the past 4 years can be, well, it's an interesting question, exactly what to do with all those memories of the last 4 years, right? We can come back to that and discuss those.
Ooh, I have a good response for that when we get to it.
Okay. But we want to be, at least in this instance, forward-looking and celebrating the moment, because yesterday, on the 20th, I was glued to the TV most of the day. I turned it on after the coverage moved to Washington, D.C., where the Bidens were going to church and people were preparing for wonderful things. I have to admit, Washington was beautiful. I mean, I was looking at it today all day saying, oh, I wish I could go back. And there were flags. Of course, there were no people there, but there were flags on the mall. Tuesday night, again, I don't know if you saw it, Mariah, but there was an absolutely gorgeous COVID remembrance in the reflecting pool with the, I think they called it luminaria, sort of the lit cloth candle-like things. Quite beautiful and moving. But anyway, Joe Biden's the president, and there you go. Did you get to see any of it? I mean, were you walking on cloud nine like I was?
I was. It was a lot of fun to watch the, you know, of course, Lady Gaga and J-Lo did their songs, which was great. But they had the poet laureate, the youth poet laureate, Amanda Gardner. I'm afraid I haven't gotten her name correct.
Gorham. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And oh my goodness, her poem. Oh, it was just beautiful. It was just so moving. And she delivered it in magnificent fashion. It was really, really moving.
I saw someone on Twitter saying that the Amanda Gorham's has the hands of a dancer, because as she spoke, her hands were in. And quite honestly, Mariah, what I did was to download the C-SPAN clip of that piece of poetry, and had this idea that I would append it to the end of this podcast. Yeah. I think that's legal because C-SPAN is paid for by my taxes. and so I think it's okay. So dear listener, check out the end of the podcast. If I can get myself around to engineering it in, I'll try and put the poem in. It's quite a beautiful poem,
worth
though.
And yeah.
Really, really worth it. And if I don't, check it out online. She's everywhere. Suddenly she's 22 years old. Right. Yeah. And as the reporter that I was listening to on TV said, I remember what I was doing at 22, and it wasn't speaking at the inauguration.
Yeah, and I think she talked about how she has, you know, her dream is to become the first woman, female president, and or to become president as a female. And she was just like so honored to be standing there at the inauguration of a president, you know, especially with Kamala Harris.
I think that the thing and the reason we're talking about it here at the beginning of the of a show about climate is just that it was such a signature of the uplifting nature and the rebirth of some kind of good feeling about everything, right? That's
and of course, not least of which that, you know, Biden said in his speech, he called for unity in a really beautiful and meaningful way that was you know, he said he was a president for all people, but he also made sure to mention that climate change is a catastrophe we're facing right now. And that, I mean, I think it was really compelling how he said, we all, this is something that's so big and we need all of us working together. We can't stop this without unity. So I thought that was also.
You're right. So that's a place to begin. Biden got to mentioning climate within 2 or 3 minutes of the beginning of the speech. It was right there, right there. And I've seen commentary that says this is the first time in a presidential inaugural anyone said white supremacy, right? Which is kind of a stunning thing. And in fact, what I did was, I think I've got it. Yeah, I do have the quote in front of me. Let me just briefly read. This is within the first 10 paragraphs of the speech. He says, few people in our nation's history have been more challenged or found a time more challenging or difficult than the time we're in now. A once-in-a-century virus, millions of jobs have been lost, thousands of businesses closed, a cry for racial justice some 400 years in the making. Dreams of justice for all will be deferred no longer. The cry for survival comes from the planet itself, a cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now the rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism. I mean, I think that, again, the speech was so down to earth and accessible and touched on all the right things in a way that inspired confidence that it's a good thing.
Give us hope for going forward.
Give us hope. But one of the other things I wanted to so, of course, then President Biden went off.
That's fun to say, right?
That's fun to say. I'm going to say it again. President Biden went back to the White House and signed some executive orders, which I want to talk about. But there was I think there's a couple of overarching things that struck me that I thought would be useful to point out. And some of the stuff that I heard on TV and I think is true, is that the peaceful transition of power that we saw today was not inevitable. I mean, we're all acutely aware of what happened on January 6th, right? How close we came to something that was not. And in fact, you could argue that there has not been a peaceful transfer of power because there was an assault on the Capitol, right? But what happened today was not inevitable. But I think the reverse sign of that, the reverse of that fragility, is also the fact that it was not impossible if people put the effort in. And the analogy to climate change is real, right? It's scary, but if we all pull in the row in the same direction or on the same sort of unified kind of team, you can do amazing things, right? So maybe that's one kind of lesson that fell out of what I saw today. Second thing is that, the progressive wing of our politics now holds the White House, the Senate, and the House. And I've seen these tweets from Mitch McConnell talking about how we have to negotiate the power sharing, which makes my, in the Senate, because it's 50-50, which makes my head explode. It's like, we own it. We should do what we need to do with it and not mince around with the likes of Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and see what they think about what we want to do. Because I know what they're going to think about it. And the third point, Mariah, I'm interested in your reaction. The third point to all this is that many of the executive orders we're going to talk about is Biden reversing Trump, just as Trump was reversing, not just as, but similarly to the way Trump was reversing Obama. And what a sorry thing it is for a time that the government seems to ricochet every 4 years with every new president from one side to the other. And no wonder the rest of the world looks at us askance and says, okay, what's going to happen in 2024, right? I mean, and that just doubles down on how difficult it is for President Biden to make get us underway in the world again. Does that make any sense?
It doesn't. I mean, I think that just comes from this deep, deep polarization, right? If there wasn't such a strong polarization between Democrats and Republicans, things that hold our common interests, like planetary health, right? We need to have a planet we can live on, wouldn't be in the balance as a political issue. You know, even 15 years ago, there was a broader support from both sides for things that were important to clean air, clean water, clean health, clean air, clean water, clean planetary health, all of those things. And all of a sudden we have this really deep divide that makes issues like this a pendulum that swings back and forth. And that's pretty frustrating. Mm-hmm. And it's something I would like to see us get over. You know, one of the things that Biden talked about in his speech was the importance of coming together and not looking at, you know, looking at people on the other side as a neighbor and not a political opponent. Right. I think that's true. I also think that there's a lot of folks who need to not politicize climate change. And I hope that we start to see that happening and taking action around those things. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that we stop swinging back and forth like this, because
I agree. So I mean, it's just one of these mega trends in American history that you can look at and say, all right. And I think our task is to build that, at least to keep the right people in charge for as long as is necessary to establish a consistent policy for a while. So, Mariah, what Joe Biden did today? He went back to the Oval Office, and after they fumigated it and sprayed down the walls and got all the coronavirus cooties out of there, he sat down to start signing executive orders, right? So some 17 executive orders. I saw a brief clip. I don't know if you saw it. But he just started talking about it and would take one off a pile and sign it and say what it was and sign it, put it to the side. Which was refreshingly humble as opposed to other people who show off their signature as if it's something that we should all admire. But the things that Joe Biden executive order, so let's just square up. An executive order is something that the president can do of his own accord, right? He has the power inherent in being the president to make an order. Of course, the problem with executive orders that echoes all the way back to Obama is that the next guy can reverse it, which is why you'd prefer to have legislation that deals with things that makes it more permanent. But still in all, what Joe Biden did today was that one of the first things he did was to put us back into the famous Paris Accord. So tell me, Mariah, is rejoining the Paris Accord a good thing or a wonderful thing?
It is definitely a wonderful thing. I mean, I'm so excited. Of course, you know, we can't undo 4 years worth of lost time as far as greenhouse gas emissions go. I think the past 6 years have been the hottest on record, right? But at least we're now moving in the right direction. We've gone back to being a leader. We've gone back to being a model for the rest of the world in terms of what we need to do for climate, and hopefully we can make up for some lost time.
Yeah, I think that rejoining the Paris Accord, in my feeling, allows us to try to exert international influence from a position of sort of moral authority, right, which we surrendered. But within the Paris Accord, that moral authority comes from your commitment to your commitments to reduce carbon pollution, and those commitments have to be backed up by national plans. So there is this sort of inside-outside game that the Paris Accord, the effectiveness of the United States can act within the Paris Accord and lead other people depends on how well internally the United States is addressing its own climate issues. But still in all, it's much, much, much better to be part of the Paris Accord than that's the first baby step, right? And I think it's been said many times, it's a zeroth order threshold that you have to do. It's not like the end of the game to rejoin the Paris Accord, but it's something that you begin with, right? The next thing that President Biden did was to kill the famous Keystone XL pipeline. Do you want me to tell the story of Keystone XL?
Yeah, that's
you want
also to tell a it? Big deal. Yeah, go ahead and I'll jump in.
Yeah, so the Keystone XL dates all the way back to sort of 2014. It's something that Bill McKibben rallied in Washington, D.C. and surrounded the White House with a line of people back in the days when peaceful protests in D.C. were a thing, right? And the Keystone XL pipeline is going to carry crude oil across the Canadian border down into Nebraska, and lots of opposition from many different fronts. And Obama in 2015 finally killed it, because Obama had the option to accept or reject a project that crosses the international border, right? The reason Obama could be involved at all was because it crossed the border. He could say yay or nay on that. As soon as the next president got into office, he reversed that rejection and allowed the Keystone XL pipeline to go forward against all of these sort of eminent domain questions and water rights questions and all kinds of stuff for 4 years. This thing still isn't built. But today, President Biden, I'll keep saying that, President Biden killed it for the second time. And that's a good thing. Do you think?
Yeah, for climate, I mean, certainly for climate emissions, it's critical, right? I mean, every new pipeline we build is a mistake, to me, a mistake financially, right? Because the return on investment can't be there because we need to retire all of these things. But, you know, of course, also just the more fossil fuels we burn, the worse off we're going to be. I think it's made Canada a little bit upset, right?
You're kind of counting on that, huh?
Yeah, right. I know that Trudeau is not so keen, because I think that you know, that was a big that the they want Canada, you know, it's depending right on that. There's a lot of jobs connected to that. I know that the corporation that operates the pipeline said that they're going to try and make it zero, net zero emissions, and all these other things.
I saw a line about that too, how the pipeline was going to be net zero, which I think means that the lights that they're burning in the office and the computers that are monitoring the flow are going to be offset somehow. But all the crummy oil going through the pipeline—that's not
someone else's problem, right?
That's somebody else. Just,
whoever uses it has to offset us. Offset it, not us.
Well, I think that it's both a real and a symbolic thing, right? There's real carbon pollution that would come from those tar sands, but at the same time, it is a symbolic rejection of the infrastructure. And the stuff I've seen says, thank you very much, Mr. President Biden. How about the Dakota Access Pipeline? How about the Mountain Valley Pipeline of Virginia? How about Line 3 that's running underneath underneath Lake Michigan? Right. Yeah. So,
get rid of them all.
Get rid of them all. And interestingly enough, so there's a press conference that I saw at 7 o'clock where the press spokesman purported to tell the truth, right, and not be just a fop. And like one of the executive orders that President Biden signed was to stop allowing any leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve. Remember, so we talked about this painful, painful thing that the former president really just, he was desperate to get the Arctic National, or as it's called, ANWR, A-N-W-R, leased out. President Biden stopped that. But then one of the reporters said, okay, what about all the other leasing on national lands? And the press secretary said, well, yeah, fair enough. And we promised we were going to stop that. But basically, we couldn't get the legal review done in time. And there are questions whether or not the president can just order that no more federal lands in Nebraska and Wyoming be leased for fossil fuels. But again, this is an example for me of how, and you and I talked about this, how we need to keep the pressure on Biden, even though we love him, right? Even though he's our guy, he doesn't get a pass just because we need to press him all the time on doing the utmost.
Right? And kudos to those reporters for being there to push him on that, right? Something where a couple of years ago, you wouldn't bring up climate change in a press conference because nobody cares. Nobody wants to hear. It doesn't sell news, whatever it is, right? So good for them that they're out there making those words heard. So,
in one of the other orders, so there's so much. So we have so much to talk about here. But one of the other orders that came down was that Biden will reinstitute the group that sets the social cost of carbon. Now, this is a thing we've talked about off and on, but the social cost of carbon, dear listener, is a number that the federal government assigns to say, what's the damage that is associated with a ton of carbon dioxide, for example. How much money is that going to cost us? The more, the higher the social cost, the higher the damage from that ton of carbon, the more it is justifiable to take action in the here and now, because you can see these costs. It's like the price of carbon, right? We keep talking about putting a price on carbon. This is what the price would be.
And you say cost, you mean like the cost to human health, the cost to planetary health. It's basically taking the externalities, which are the things that burning fossil fuels affects in negative ways, and incorporating them into the price of burning that fossil fuel.
Exactly. And so, again, that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. Mm-hmm. So that, and also there's so very many good things that President Biden did today. And there you go. Oh, my goodness. Well, there's, I think that there's so much we probably should put a, as they say, put a lid on this.
I do have one thing to circle back around. You said you were at the beginning of the top of the show. We talked about, you know, what do we do with the past 4 years?
Oh,
and
yeah.
So there was actually this really beautiful ceremony. A bunch of volunteers got together and created this inauguration. It's called an inauguration kolam to honor Kamala Harris's Indian roots. And basically it's a beautiful work of art, and they've done it out of paper, but traditionally it's a series of dots made with rice powder, and the dots represent the hardships that you have faced or problems or obstacles from your past. And then you take a line of rice and you weave it around those dots, showing how you've learned the pathways to get around them, which is, I think, such a beautiful and fitting way to sort of move forward, right? We have some hardships, we have some dots that we have to kind of find our way around, but we're going to work together, we're going to meditate, we're going to weave our way through this and come out with something very beautiful in the end.
That's great. That, well, you're bringing me back to her being sworn in by Sotomayor and being guarded by the guy that protected the Senate from the Capitol Police. I mean, what a beautiful ceremony it was today. Well, Mariah, this is a day that we will look back on fondly. We have, I think, I'll put up the link. I just saw the headline from the heated Substack post from Emily Atkins. And the headline was, "The day that our enemies turned into adversaries," right? So Joe Biden may be an adversary that we want to push to do climate action, but he's not the enemy anymore. So that's a good thing. What we'll do is we'll put up links to what we talked about on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have any of your own recollections about the President Biden's inauguration, please send them to us. It was a beautiful day. You can send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Of course, you're listening to this show probably on your smartphone or your iPad or your whatever. Tell your friends that they can listen to it on their streaming device using the latest podcast streaming application. And while you're at it, rank us so that we move up in the rankings. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for rehashing this happy day with me.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.
Hi, don't go away yet. What follows is the audio of Amanda Gorman, who was the 2017 National Youth Poet Laureate, speaking and reciting a poem at the inaugural. The clip here is courtesy of C-SPAN, and the link to the actual footage is on the blog. Enjoy.
Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans, and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother can dream of becoming president only to find herself reciting for one. And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first. We must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. That even as we grieved, we grew. That even as we hurt, we hoped. That even as we tired, we tried. That we'll forever be tied together, victorious. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it. Because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it, would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated. In this truth, in this faith we trust, for while we have our eyes on the future, history has its eyes on us. This is the era of just redemption. We feared it at its inception. We did not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour, but within it we found the power to author a new chapter, to offer hope and laughter to ourselves. So while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe? Now we assert, how could catastrophe possibly prevail over us? We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised but whole, benevolent but bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than the one we were left. With every breath from my bronze pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the west. We will rise from the windswept northeast where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked south. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.